So it is 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. I'm David King. I'm chair of the Planning Commission. We have almost all the Planning Commission commissioners here. We have Mike Harmer, Marty Seitz, Jim Deedes, Mike Pereskevich, and Don Gritty. Chuck McKinney is unfortunately ill, and I appreciate his not sharing. If you'd join me in the pledge.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today is January 17th, 2015, meeting of the Planning Commission. There are a number of things on the agenda, a public hearing and commissioner deliberations on definitions and standards related to height for buildings in the flood zones, discussion on definitions in Chapter 1 and related cleanup amendments to Chapter 185 that I would like to, currently that's the number three on the agenda. I'd like to move that to the end, if nobody has an objection. Amendments to Chapter 185, which is the zoning, and Chapter 80, civil offenses, related to cleanup activities related to the recently adopted Chapter 101 and floodplain management code. And then a possible pathway forward for our discussions on zoning in the neighborhood residential district, and then to talk both about possible pathways forward, and if we deem it appropriate to then sit and discuss various concepts for that. So the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. And do I have a motion?
I have a motion to accept the minutes.
Seconds.
So is there any discussion, any comments?
No comment.
Any cleanup? Then I will ask for a vote of approval. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
So that's unanimous. So I will open the public hearing related to a draft ordinance to amend building height standards for buildings in special flood hazard areas by adding or amending definitions in Chapter 1, General Provisions, Section 116, definitions related to height, grade, building envelope, and substantially similar configuration. Amending the height standard in Chapter 185, Zoning Table 2, bulk standards for all districts, to change how maximum building height is defined and regulated for buildings in special flood hazard areas within the town of Dewey Beach. Amending Chapter 185 zoning, Section 185.46, modification of height regulations to waive standards under certain circumstances, and providing for severability, proper formatting, and establishment of an effective date. So there are a bunch of whereas clauses. Section 1 is to amend building height definitions, where we recommend amendments to the definition of building height and grade. And if anybody needs wants a copy to follow along, there are copies in the back of the room. So I don't know whether it's better to read this through or discuss what the...
If it's not necessary to read it through legally or whatever, we could discuss it. And I've done my review, and I'm going to say that I don't have any comments on the document that's been put together. We've
okay.
On
well,
it.
This is the public hearing,
public hearing. Okay.
So maybe I will read through the
yes.
The brief form of it. So this is recommending an amendment on how building height is defined, and the proposed new definition would be building height, the vertical distance from some specific...
Where are you at, David?
I'm on page 2, top of page 2.
Top of page 2, okay.
the vertical distance from some specific reference point to the highest point of the building or structure not specifically listed in exclusions to height restriction standards in Chapter 185 zoning, Table 2, bulk standards in all districts. For any property located in a special flood hazard area as designated on an effective flood insurance rate map, this specific reference point shall be taken as the elevation defined by FEMA's base flood elevation plus the town mandatory freeboard. For any property outside such special flood hazard areas, this specific reference point shall be taken as the elevation of the highest point of any roadway abutting the property, taken at the center point of the lot frontage, that is to say, grade. And a definition for grade, that is the elevation of the highest point of any roadway abutting the property taken at the center point of the lot frontage. So section two is to create definitions for vertical building envelope, horizontal building envelope, and building envelope. Building envelope vertical, the vertical distance from the finished surface of the flooring of the lowest level of the lowest floor of a building or structure to the highest point not specifically listed in exclusions to height restriction standards in Chapter 185 zoning, Table 2. Building envelope horizontal. For a one-story building or structure, the detailed footprint defined by the exterior surfaces of the walls of all habitable areas, attached garage and or storage areas, and covered decks or enclosed porches. For a multi-story building or structure, a separate horizontal building envelope shall be determined in a similar manner for each floor or partial floor. And then for building envelope, the three-dimensional solid determined by a building or structure's vertical and horizontal building envelopes is herein described. So section three is to define substantially similar configuration. So substantially similar configuration. When applied to certain issues in the town zoning and flood damage reduction code, refers to improvements or repairs to a building or structure, such as rehabilitation or remodeling, that do not affect the external dimensions of said building or structure, nor expand the total enclosed area or deck area of said building or structure. Specifically, two buildings or structures, including an improved building or structure and the pre-improved building or structure, shall be considered of substantially similar configuration when the horizontal building envelope of the two buildings match each other floor by floor, and the two buildings or structures have the same vertical building envelope. The minimum concessions required to provide building code compliant entrance and egress to a building or structure elevated to meet or exceed the town's minimum flood standards shall be interpreted to be contained within the definition of substantially similar. Also referred to in town code as essentially the same configuration. And then section four is amendments to chapter 185 in the bulk standards, table two bulk standards for building height, for the height standards. In the NR district, for buildings not in any special flood hazard area, maximum building height 35 feet measured from grade, maximum number of stories 2.5. Roof decks are permitted with all decks and railings subject to this height standard. The floor area of any roof deck shall not exceed 20% of the covered and or enclosed floor area of the top story. The finished floor elevation of any top floor deck shall not be less than 6 feet below the elevation of the roof peak. All above deck railing must be the higher of 42 inches above the deck surface or in compliance with the most current building code. And this is essentially the definition that is currently in the code. For buildings in any special flood hazard area, maximum building height 32 feet measured from the elevation of the 1% annual flood level on the appropriate effective FEMA flood insurance rate map plus appropriate town mandatory freeboard, except in any VE, special flood hazard area, where one additional foot of height shall be permitted due to the difference in base building elevation reference points for AO and AE, special flood hazard areas, versus VE. Maximum number of stories, 2.5, and the rest of this would be the same as currently there and in the section above. And then for all of the other zoning districts, for buildings not in any special hazard area, this again is essentially what is currently in the code. Maximum building height, 35 feet measured from grade. Maximum number of stories, 3. Roof decks are permitted with all decks and railings subject to this height standard. All above ground deck railing must be the higher of 42 inches above the deck surface or in compliance with the most current town building code. And for buildings in any special flood hazard area, the maximum building height, 32 feet, measured from the elevation of the 1% annual flood level on the appropriate effective FEMA flood insurance rate map, plus appropriate town mandatory freeboard, except in any VE special flood hazard area, where one additional foot shall be permitted due to the difference in the building elevation reference points for AO and AE special flood hazard areas versus VE, and then maximum number of stories, 3, and then that's all the same language. Section 5 is to amend section 185.46, which is a section in the code called Modification of Height Regulations, to permit the owners of property in a flood zone which has suffered substantial damage to rebuild what they had prior to such damage. So we would add a section A saying that the height standard of this chapter, see table 2, bulk zoning standards in all districts at the end of chapter 2, shall be waived for a pre-firm building or structure situated in a special flood hazard area that is substantially damaged and therefore must be raised to a specified minimum base flood elevation determined by FEMA's effective flood insurance rate map determined by FEMA's effective flood insurance rate map base flood level plus town mandatory freeboard, provided such building or structure is rebuilt to substantially similar configuration as existed prior to the damage and not elevated more than 0.1 foot above such elevation as required to meet town flood damage reduction ordinance. And there are two typos there. And then B would be all other exclusions to the maximum height standard are included in Table 2 bulk standards in all districts. And then there are sections on severability, formatting, and effective date. So I am asking, is there any public comment, input, questions? If not, I will close the public portion of the public hearing portion of this meeting and open this up to commissioner discussion. So, Mike, we have your input that you're good with it.
Yes, that's correct. What you just read looks good. Dan, I was going to say that the only thing that I see in here that would be up for debate that I would be willing to debate would be the 32 foot versus 35 feet. Because you have on page 3 in the RR zones down, you have towards the bottom where you say for buildings and any special flood hazard, maximum building height 32 feet measured from elevation, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about 32 or 35, you know, being, you know, the thought being, the reason why we were talking about the 35 was that would cover any case, no matter what.
Right.
32 feet, you've proven to my satisfaction, I think the group, we've all proven, at least to my satisfaction, that is that the 32 would cover most cases. So, you know, in the interest of gaining consensus and moving things along, I could see the 32 foot, me supporting the 32, but you know, I still caution the town, if we go with the 32, that might, every case might not be covered. And that means that, you know, I know you put some vehicles in place, if we can deal, you know, get board of adjustment situations straight as far as who's going to do what with variances, then that would be an avenue for folks that might have been hurt by a foot or two of this, go to the board of adjustment. So, and we got some solid language in here that I think supports trying not to cause negative damage to someone who might have otherwise, you know, we didn't see in our analyses, because right. We're not a surveying company sitting here, you know, with all the perfect elevations. You ran some scenarios to me. We've done a thorough job. I think we've done as thorough of a job as a planning commission could be expected to do. And you've shown enough cases to me that I could go to 32, but the 35 does cover everything. So, barring any if you know any other discussion, I'll support the 32. But if we want to go with the 35, I'll
yeah.
I mean, waiver to that.
as you remember, we had a big discussion about exactly this issue.
And, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Marty's point is that people should give up something, and this was kind of a compromise. Plus, I think 32 is a number that would put, you know, 80% of the people today at kind of the same place, maybe 90%, you know, or maybe even more, who knows. I mean, you're right, we haven't gone around for each individual property, but if flood levels rise and the town increases the freeboard, 32 puts them in a, you know, pretty much everybody except, you know, one or two hardship cases. And I think we're going to take care of the board of adjustment case. Marty?
I think this, these definitions are giving, I think they're doing what we wanted to in terms of accommodating people that might be in flood zone areas to extend the longevity of the occupation of those buildings. And, you know, they do give up a little bit in height, but they do have that extension of capability, extension of the occupancy. We don't have cases today, you know, in that situation, but we might have 20 years from now. So that's kind of looking forward to that possibility. So no, I think that's fine. I don't have any other comments. I think that works out really
well. Yeah, I am going to say I'm not in support of anybody giving up anything, but I think you've proven that, you know, that it doesn't seem like people are giving up anything. If there is a case, you've got vehicles to correct that. The only way to guarantee that would be, I think, maybe the 35. But if in the interest of moving along and the democratic process, you know, the 32, I think you've done a good enough job to get me to support the 32. So that's all I'll say on it.
Well, I was at the 35-foot level, and I feel that probably would cover all instances of problems, and we wouldn't require people to go to the Board of Adjustment. It is not cheap to go to the Board of Adjustment, having taken a look at some of the cases that have gone back. So if we can minimize people from having to go to the Board of Adjustment to meet whatever requirements are to substantially build their house back to the same level.
Well, we're not...
No, I'm just saying that I would rather have the 35-foot. I think it covers everybody in the town.
But do we cover people building their... people who have substantial damage under a different section, which says that they can build what they have at the FEMA? So we have no limit on height for people who are rebuilding after...
We have no limit at all.
No limit at all for...
That's the way I
mean, it's
being, yes, that's why
it's got to be built to
vertical.
It's got to be built to the same
vertical footprint.
Vertical footprint
as the building.
Well, it's got to be not only the same vertical footprint, but the same horizontal footprint. It's got to
right.
be built to
right.
the same.
So they could build their same house height wise.
So anybody who's in a house that is substantially damaged who wants to rebuild, but also has to meet the FEMA plus town minimum
setback.
Minimum elevation gets to rebuild exactly what they have.
It's complicated. I still think the 35 covers everything, but you're talking 3 feet. So, and you do have those words in there. I agree with you. How they're going to work in the future and 10 years from now, you know, might be differently than you're thinking or I'm thinking, you know, when if one of us is not here or it's a different building official, you know, you know, it's the 35 will cover, I think, everything. You wouldn't have to worry about it. But the 32 also, you know, you've done a good enough job of showing for most cases that we've looked at. So I'm willing to go with the 32 at this point. You added the language that does cover the existing, you know,
existing building
situation.
That's substantially damaged.
But my fear is that let me just use an example. Let's say, and I'm not an owner of a surf club anymore, but say a surf club got wiped out. Alright? Could they build that exact same footprint, meet, you know, get the 38 feet or wherever they're at, get the three stories that they need plus the parking underneath that they have now, and not get jammed up under county building codes as well as, you know, because when they start throwing in all these codes that we're not looking at right now, building codes, things are going to get added. I know you sort of said in the language you put in that stairways needed or kind of exempt. Did I read that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was great stuff. I think we have some very good language in there. But are there other areas where they're going to get jammed up in the process of rebuilding and getting real building permits, you know, trying to meet that existing footprint? I don't know if that's going to be possible or not. Mike, you might have more experience. I know you're civil and I'm civil, but in the other areas, what's going to happen?
Well,
we really haven't really
seen my thoughts there are, you know, we discussed the 32. We got down to the 32 because we discussed a house. You know, what can you build in a 32-foot height limit? And you can build a three-story house in a 32-foot limit and still have 9-foot ceilings and roof decks and things like that. I think it's such a diverse, Dewey has so much diversity that if you start looking at individual things like the surf club and next thing down the block and all that, we're going to get stuck and never move on.
That's
you know,
great.
If a catastrophe happens that's going to be such large that it requires a surf club to rebuild, I don't think we can plan for that today. I think we do have avenues. I know people don't like to hear a board of adjustment, but you know, if it doesn't meet the code, it has to go back to the board of adjustment. It has to do that. But there's so much diversity in town that we can't cover everything. And a 32-foot vertical footprint, you can build a three-story house with 9-foot ceilings.
You know, I gotta agree with you, Mike, 100%. If the scenario I pointed out on a property such as a surf club or similar got totally wiped out, I could not see how the quick check hardships would not apply. Hey, the new building code is requiring a much bigger fire sprinkler system or something that doesn't fit in this footprint, et cetera, et cetera. The hardship is we got to do it. We got to sort of cheat the setback or whatever. Therefore, I have a hardship. I would think that those would be able to be proven in those cases, you know, a total wipeout.
Yeah.
And we can't plan for those.
Yeah,
so I'm going with 32.
I think if you have a total wipeout, to rebuild, building officials are going to be more concerned about preventing catastrophic damages more so than heights and things like that. You know, when the next storm comes, how can we sustain that rather than how high is it going to be? I think that's going to be the major issue. And the height's not going to be a problem if they want to rebuild to the height they have.
And David, I mean, I think that we did listen to some of the current cases we know about with these stairs and things like that. You know, the landing's got to be there, and you know, you can encroach upon the setbacks and things to get those right for egress access.
Within reason.
I understand that. So, you know, we can sit here for another year, I'm sure,
Don?
But I'm going to support it now the way it's written. So thank you, David, for a great job doing this.
Thank you.
I don't have any problem at all with the way this thing is written. I think in the past, David alluded to the possibility that there might be people who want to play the system. And I think this, the way it's written, gives plenty of leeway to people whose properties are damaged without leaving us too open to people who would take advantage of what's on paper.
Okay. So I have a couple of kind of administrative issues. The bottom of page 2. So this is in the substantially similar configuration definition. The last sentence said the minimum concessions required to provide building code compliant entrance and egress to a building or structure elevated to meet or exceed the town's flood elevation standards. And I think that the real intent was to provide that for buildings that are elevated to the minimum, but not to buildings that are elevated to exceed. But I'm quite happy to either strike exceed or retain exceed.
So you would take or exceed, you would take those two words out?
I would take out the or exceed, because again, we're talking about existing structures that are substantially damaged, that are going to be given this waiver of just elevating to the minimum.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I agree with that.
That the exceed might allow them to go higher is what you're saying?
Well, the exceed might allow them to go higher, and that would be a bigger staircase and more possible intrusion into the...
I like the exceed myself, because then it, you know, my theory is that the minimum levels that are being put out there are not enough to go forward in the world that we're living in, going long term, 100 years. So, if I'm a homeowner and you won't let me build, you know, exceed in that area, I might want to try to exceed. And you can say, well, you go to board adjustment if you want to. So, I would like to leave it, but, you know, if you take it out, I'm not going to, you know. I'm still going to vote yes for this, because I still see vehicles that people could try to exceed by board of adjustment, right?
Sure. I mean, if there's a hardship, then there's a hardship, and if there isn't, there isn't. And
I mean, you know, you get into the, we could sit here another year and debate, you know, am I going to lose my view by going higher and all that, you know, versus public protection. And yeah, what's worse, having houses that aren't, that are going to sit there and get mold in them and not be occupied and turn into infested messes, or built to the FEMA requirements, and people might lose a little bit of their view they think they're entitled to. So, taking the seat out, it's not going to break my heart, but I think it doesn't hurt to have it in there.
Anybody else have...
Is the word complaint or compliance spelled correctly?
It should be
it's
compliant.
It's compliant, thank you.
My eighth grade nun.
Just be clear whether you're taking it out or leaving it in. So, you know. I think it helps someone who wants to go a little higher if they wanted to exceed the minimum.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's okay to leave it in, because we do, so we, in section 5, which is the last page, provided such building or structure is rebuilt to a substantially similar configuration and not elevated more than 0.1 feet, so... I think that's okay, because there are other places in the code where there's a reference to rebuilding non-conforming structures, for example, where there's a reference to you can rebuild it if you rebuild it to this essentially substantially the similar configuration. And there it's not necessarily a height problem.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And I mean, one of the things the Board of Adjustment has asked in the past is for a definition of substantially similar configuration, so we're good with
so
that.
So leave it in. What you're saying.
Leave it in. On page 3, line 126. No, I'm sorry, line 127. There should be a space between above and ground.
Okay.
All right. On page 4, on line 148, I believe that it should be the end of chapter 185, not chapter 2. Line 151, the first word map should be capitalized. And then I would like to add under the effective date, line 168 on page 4, I would like to consider an alternative language for the effective date that would say something like, this ordinance shall become effective immediately as an alternative voluntary standard and a mandatory standard in 6 months from adoption. So what that does is, you know, somebody who has been spending 3 months designing a house that might be in conflict with this, we're not going to screw up all of that. We're giving people a 6-month planning window. But we're providing them this as flexibility tomorrow. So for 6 months, they have two options that they could design and build to. Providing the lawyer, I would suggest putting that in as long as the lawyer, because I haven't flown this past the lawyer, but I would like to put it in and forward it to the commissioners with a recommendation from the lawyer. And because I think, I know there are people who are planning houses, and I just...
Is this for somebody who already has a house in the building permit stage? Or
no, this is somebody who's thinking.
They're just thinking about
About buying a property and building a house, or working with an architect on plans. This is people who... I mean, if you had building permits, you would be exempt from any change. But this is to give people 6 months to... essentially pull the trigger on their, to come in and get a building permit if they're one of the few cases that would have a problem with it.
So while this is if we approve this today, in other words, if we approve this today and while it's going to the commissioners for final approval, there might be somebody who was planning to build a house and...
Well, I know people who are working with architects designing a house.
Right.
And they're probably not going to be ready to... They're probably not going to have final designs and be ready to come for permits until April or May.
Okay.
And so this is saying, if this gets approved, the next day you could come in and apply for permits under these standards or under the existing standards. 6 months from when this is adopted by the commissioners, that option, that voluntary option or that alternative would close and you would have to come in and apply for a permit under this standard.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a big thing, but I just don't know why we want to once this becomes effective, it's effective.
Maybe. Well, I think it gives you a little bit of a ramp because, first of all, nobody today can depend on this becoming law because the commissioners haven't voted on it. So if they're doing anything, they're doing it under existing code.
Right.
And the evening when the commissioners vote on this and they vote 3-2 or 4-1 or
5-1. 5-0.
5-0.
Yeah.
Then it becomes law and all of a sudden everything's changed without that ramp in, without that 6-month ramp in.
So the ramp in period is
gives you
we've kind of taken this approach to if we're going to change things that might affect somebody's, rights. We want to give people advance warning.
Well, potentially you could have somebody going to a settlement on a piece of property. That may
sure.
You could be.
Yeah.
But I think I think 6 months is, and we're not doing this to penalize. I mean, we're not doing this to penalize people.
Right.
We're doing this to enable people. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that was the whole driver behind this is to enable people and. In flood zones, and so this.
But I like the idea, and I think you can highlight that and make sure that the commissioners understand what that is and what the lawyer looks at it and says whether that's valid or not, and then they can decide whether they want it. But I think it's a nice feature because if we get sidetracked and the commissioners get sidetracked and stuff, and this isn't done until July of this year instead of March of this year. It's not a fundamental difference to the town. Maybe it's FEMA. I don't know if FEMA is requiring this, but that 6 months is not going to make or break the design of the town or be some sort of it's not going to provide a window for people to become opportunistic. It's not like there's going to be no zoning for the next 6 months. It's the existing zoning is going to continue for another 6 months.
For another 6 months. I mean, we can make it a year or
I think
3 months.
Months.
You know, 6 months.
I wouldn't get 6 months.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't get more than 6 months because I understand everything you're saying and I agree on you can break, but there are people out there. I guess I'm being an advocate of the other side. Well, I got 6 months now to change what I, you know, I got 6 months to get my permit in and go to the old code versus the new code. And it can be done. You know, they can whip up some plans in a month and get it in there and because they want to turn the old code after the new code's passed.
Right.
So if you go any longer than 6 months, I don't think, you know, how many houses are built yearly, you know, in the deal, I don't think it's going to be a major factor, but just.
And people will know today that this is coming in 6 months and can, you know, if they're thinking about buying a property, then they're probably 6 months out from permits.
They want to slip it in 6 months and they
so we I think I sense we're
let's put that in there. Let's make sure the commissioners understand there's a reason not to do that.
Okay, so then there is a so then we would add below Mark Applebaum the town manager's signature an effective date. It would set an effective mandatory date and whatever the date is, it would be 6 months from the
you'd add under section 8.
Right. So I had one other thought that was triggered by Mike Harmer's comment about what do you do if... So this is, again, Section 5, where we're amending the 185.46 modification of height regulations, probably line 152. That basically says you can, if you're in a flood zone, you're substantially damaged, you can build, substantially damaged, you can rebuild to a substantially similar configuration as existed prior to the damage. And I'd like to think about adding, rebuild to a substantially similar configuration as existed prior to the damage, except for any increase in vertical envelope as required for increased ceiling heights in habitable spaces required by building code. So if you've got a 6.5 foot ceiling, you know, I don't know how you'd have a building that was 34 feet high. With, so you've got four floors with 6.5 foot ceilings, and the code says 7.5 foot ceilings are required. Then this would, since you're going to have to rebuild to modern building codes,
allow them to do it.
Would allow them to build effectively what they have, but it's going to be a taller building. I mean, I realize Marty would say they should give up some of their attic space, but.
Yeah, or ductwork. I mean, if they have 2 or 3 foot ductwork channels in between their stories.
So you would want them to go to the Board of Adjustment and, yeah. I mean, that would be a case where they would have to, could go to the Board of Adjustment and say, you know, I want to rebuild my 3-story house. I have 6.5 foot ceilings. To rebuild it, I need 7.5 foot ceilings. And, the town would say no, and the Board of Adjustment would say there's a hardship or there's not a hardship. And
I don't like that one.
I think
to the board.
Okay. So, any other?
Yeah, I do have a comment on the building height regulations, and it really goes back to the. This should be tied to. It's a 2.5 story. And I'd like to tie that to the definitions, and I'm not sure we've accepted the definitions for 2.5 stories as of yet.
Well, I mean, the 2.5 story language is already in there.
I know, what I'm saying is if we go back and we do change the definition somehow...
Then we'll change this.
Then we'll have to change this as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as we are right now, this is the cart.
That's the cart.
Sensing no additional comment, are we ready to vote on this?
I
mean, as I said earlier, not earlier today, but in the email I sent out with all of this information, we've had public hearings and open meetings for the last year and a half on this issue, and we've had lots of discussion. And although I would be quite happy to have another public hearing and discussion, I think we're ready to take a vote on this and which is a recommendation to the town commissioners and move this forward. So, can I have a motion to recommend this to, you know, the slightly edited version
to recommend to the town commissioners? We accept the proposed ordinance with the revisions that we discussed today. And we accept it as a body.
With the changes for which there were consensus. Right. And recommend that the town commissioners adopt this.
I second the motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? So that's a unanimous vote. Well, he's not here. Bless you.
Thank you. I apologize.
Yeah, why don't you go sit in the back of the room? If anybody's... Okay. So the next item that I want to deal with is an ordinance to amend Chapter 185 zoning to authorize the Board of Adjustment to grant variances from flood damage reduction requirements in Chapter 101 of the Code of Town of Dewey Beach, to amend Chapter 80 civil violations to provide a schedule of violations and fines for violations to zoning and flood damage reduction requirements, and providing severability, proper formatting, and establishment of an effective date. So this is a first draft that you're all seeing. And I would, if we move this forward and have consensus on where this should be going, then I would see us having a public hearing on this next month and possibly voting on a recommendation to the town commissioners. But we're not voting on a recommendation.
I like here the today. I looked at alternate one. Yeah, you gave us alternate one or alternate two, you know, the fines and stuff. And I think you go with alternate one. That's where I'm headed. I don't know about you, Mike.
So alternate one is essentially the existing code verbatim.
Yeah.
And alternate two was, I mean, to some extent, we had discussed, months ago, we had discussed a more complex, you know, higher fines, and...
I was actually pushing for, some higher fines for enforcement, but at this point, I think, as is, unless, Mike, you have any strong feelings on that?
Well, actually, my feelings on this is it's a little out of the realm of the Planning Commission, in my opinion, to assess the amount of fines in violation without talking to other people in town about it, because I think it kind of goes with the flow of town. You know, where does it fit in with other, I'm not saying we should research this, but where does it fit in with other violations in town and things like that, you know? And I just felt, and the reason I sent that letter to David was I just felt like as a planning commissioner, it really wasn't within my, I'd simply sit and listen and give advice, maybe as somebody suggests things, but I didn't think it was within our realm to assess violations and fines.
So I'm with you on that.
If the town is happy with the current code, and what's the word I'm looking for?
And if they're not happy, they can change it.
Yeah, they can change it.
I agree with that. I mean, this is Chapter 80. It's not.
Yeah, I started spending quite a bit of time researching other towns and whatnot for fines and violations. There's quite a bit of difference. You have not, you know, where does it fit in with the towns?
And this, I mean, to some extent,
I can't recall a fine having been issued.
There you go.
But one day, yeah.
But one day,
it's more work. Formal. You know, those tools might need to be strengthened. But
the way it is.
For now, I'm going with alternate one.
Okay. Which again is just what was there. Which is what was in the old chapter 101. And if we approve, recommend this, then we're just moving language from the old chapter 101, which is not included in the new chapter 101, but the new chapter 101 points to chapter 185. No, I'm sorry, points to chapter 80. The new 101 that just got adopted says under fines and penalties, see 80-14, section 80-14.
Okay.
But there is no current 80-14 because it used to be embedded in 101.
Okay.
But FEMA, you know, FEMA would rather have it out, and so,
I'm fine with
we all fine with alternative one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don?
Yes.
So the only, any other comments?
Not for me.
Line 43 says flood loss reduction. That should be flood damage reduction. I've had some discussion with Fred about where commas should be and commas not should be, and he thought we didn't need to include the commas in line 42, but should include the set of commas in line 44. And I will redraft this. There are two other issues that are, I think, largely questions for Fred and getting to Fred Townsend, the town attorney, and getting to a final draft for us to consider. One is this issue of the use of the words requirements and regulations. And Fred thinks that they're really not regulations, they're requirements. You know, maybe they're standards. And so I think be inclined to remove the word regulation and replace it with standards and or requirements. Or requirements and or standards, depending on Fred's recommendations on that. And then in section B on page 2, lines 51, 57 and 61 to replace the word and between unnecessary hardship and exceptional practical difficulties with and/or, which he felt was more appropriate and is actually consistent with what is in the newly adopted chapter 101, which this is tied in with. And finally, the page 2 again, line 55 and 56, the section that's highlighted. That was language that was in the current code 185, which has to do with variance use and yard variances related to zoning, and you know, in terms of flood. In terms of a variance to flood plain management code, it's not clear to me that you should get a waiver because the house next to you is, or the property next to you is used in some particular manner. I mean, you need to, so I would recommend that we just delete that.
Suggestions to me, I agree with, you know, all of them. So I didn't really say I was going to comment on it, but I'd say, you know, I concur with your...
I mean, especially since hardships are supposed to have to do with specifics related to the property. This kind of introduces something weird, and so I would recommend that we take this out. Everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody nods their heads, then so is there a consensus that I'll take this up? We'll have a final draft for a public hearing and a possible vote at the next meeting. So the next issue is a path forward for possibly rezoning or for changes in the neighborhood residential zoning. And I sent you all a kind of a straw man of some thoughts that have come up from this discussion. And the first issue is points 1, 2, and 3. You know, it seems to me we have three different ways to address.
Which item are you on, David?
I'm on item 5.
That's what I thought. Okay. Standards for the
neighborhood residential district.
Okay.
You know, we've been talking about this now for over a year. Had a number of meetings, some of them very well attended. I mean, we had 70 or more people at one of those meetings last fall.
This was the origin of the description of the North?
A lot of them, right. We started off almost a year ago with discussions about characterizing the neighborhood residential district.
Yeah.
And lots of discussions that about how to characterize it and how, you know, maybe it's too difficult to characterize in a 3x5 card.
Right. And we did get some nice write-ups from some volunteers that that live up on the north side and describe their neighborhood. So that's part of it.
Yeah, it was part of it. But
and we had the
Mike, you also had some concerns that it didn't really portray all of the NR
right.
district.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was a little apparent.
I thought it was well taken that it's not universal.
Right. I mean, there. You know, part of it is a barrier island ecosystem, and it's very beachy, and part of it is uplands or headlands, and it's forested. And even within that, you've got an area that you might characterize as resort residential in terms of development. This is the Seabreeze development, and then you've got planned residential development, and then you've got some condos, and
right.
it's really a mix. You know, there's probably four different kinds of development.
It's sort of like you almost have to do a block by block.
So part of my thinking, at least about this, is, you know, and we've talked about, do we want to do this now? Do we want to wait until the comprehensive plan rewrite in a year? I know that the town commissioners asked us to do this specifically, and they would like our recommendations on what to do, if anything, now.
Are we gonna mix the definition then yet, or are we gonna wait for the definitions?
We're gonna do the definitions after
next.
This.
Okay.
So I figured we can get through this in a half an hour or so.
David,
and then,
I recall,
yeah.
Was that the issue here for at least one of the commissioners that was pushing this on was the whole issue of the height and the 2.5 stories. And wanted us to take a look at that as part of the neighborhood residential district. How do we want to address this? And, you know, what really was the definition of the 2.5 story? And some of the buildings that were built appeared to be more than 2.5 stories, which in fact they weren't. We could tell anyway that were submitted. So I think that, I think we can address some of this now. And I think the building height we can address now. And the description of the 2.5 story and marry it together. rather than punting it further down to the
Okay, property. Well, I mean, that is one.
I'm ironing it down to a certain amount to one specific area.
So I mean, the options, at least to me, seem to be we could do nothing now and kick the can down the road and say, do the comp plan, rezone everything.
That's what I support day one, but I don't want to. I don't want to make it seem like I'm trying to get out of work. It's just that
I don't like that decision. And I don't like that option because I think we've put a lot of time and thought and gotten a lot of public input, and I would like to do something based on that input.
That's fine.
You know, in terms of what Mike Paraskevich said, you know, we could think about carving the current neighborhood residential district up into two or more different zoning districts. And then I think that's something that I think makes sense, but I think tend to leave that to the comp plan update review process, because that really is a
it would be a significant change, so to speak, mm-hmm. as to what is in town looks now.
Yeah.
And I think we should, you know, take a little more time to look into that.
I
personally don't think it would fly right now by the town commissioners if we tried to do something like that. Now, there's not been enough studying and input into it. So I think it has to be done in the future. I think it's something that should be considered in the future, because
so we could make a recommendation that this would be something that should be considered in the future, but as part of the comp plan to redraw the boundary lines.
When is the comp plan revision?
2016. Well, it's due.
Really, quite frankly, I think the Planning Commission needs to start working on it now.
It's probably a year and a half, 2 years to get something through the town commissioners, and it's due in 2017.
Plus, I think we would probably need to bring in some resources to assist the Planning Commission to do this.
I mean, I could see making a recommendation that would say that the triangle kind of sandwiched between King Charles and Route 1 is a pretty homogeneous district. Mm-hmm. And that the area east of King Charles is a pretty homogeneous district, at least in terms of the natural environment. It's more eclectic in terms of housing and stuff.
Housing is completely different.
But that's the point. The housing is completely different. And then there's a little section of the NR district that I never really think about, which is actually south and west of Route 1.
Right.
That's Clayton and Houston Street.
That's actually NR?
That's NR. And it's got condos and...
The north side of Clayton or the south side or both sides of Clayton?
It is the north side of Clayton.
North side of Clayton, ocean side?
No.
No,
north side of Clayton,
which is north side of Route 1.
So it's a triangular shaped area
that
lies south and west of Coastal Highway, the north side of the 100 block of Houston. There are eight lots. There are eight lots on.
Yeah.
And the both sides of the 100 block of St. Louis. So it's not Clayton. It's. And there are five lots on. And the properties on Baird between Houston and Coastal Highway.
Okay. So
five lots. So, you know, we're talking about a small number of lots, but they really don't fit in with the NR zoning. I mean, they would, you know.
But if we vote, I'm jumping ahead now. But if we vote on the 2.5 story issue now, that would affect the whole.
That would affect the whole thing.
Everything.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't. You know, I would think. It seems to me, and we haven't really discussed this, that you know, we could take that section which is contiguous to an RR district and
make that RR.
Make it RR, which kind of upzones everybody to, you know.
Well, it opens up different distinguishable characteristics of the buildings and uses.
Yeah.
Than the NR would.
Right.
Right,
but they kind of already are.
I mean, are.
Most of that property already is.
But I'm sure there's some people out there who
yes, might be opposed to
an NR, but they really aren't in NR, characteristically speaking.
You know, I could see a recommendation saying consider these in the comp plan review. And then, I mean, that seems one path forward. And still think about what we're, you know, what if anything we want to do in the NR district in terms of zoning in the NR district.
So you'd be one path forward might be to some type of memorandum from us, you know, that says pushing it to the comp plan, some ideas out of all the work we've done might be, you know, that little area,
right,
might be maybe two zones up in the NR district, right, for them to consider in the future. Is that what we're talking about?
That's a disaster area.
Huh?
Putting that area into an RR would be really, it'd be a mess.
Which one?
Houston.
Yeah, it really would be a mess. We've got so many problems that area with group homes and and just disorderly issues going on in that area. It's you wouldn't want to increase it in the development in that area.
Okay.
Tough.
So then the point, then the issue is if we were to make some recommendations for changing, no recommendations today, I mean, not moving forward with a letter, with a memo saying we think you might consider two zones for the NR district.
That's what I would think.
But you know what? Do we?
I think what we need to say is that this issue just be deferred to the comprehensive plan. It needs further study. And rather than say one or two or three zones, we really don't know yet.
Right. But in terms of NR, do we want to recommend specific changes in the zoning standards for what is now the NR district?
What would you mean by zoning standards? Specifically.
All of the issues that are in Table 2, Chapter 185.
The two and a half
height,
story.
Height, setbacks.
Setbacks.
You know, setbacks, height, floor area ratio, parking. You know, there's... Right, you know the table in the back.
I understand. I didn't know if you had anything specific.
No. I was thinking, you know, starting there, it seemed to me, I put down some suggestions that, I mean, one of them is setbacks. And I think you had suggested that there be one setback
for a one-story
building,
two-story,
two-story. And you know, I think that there was a lot of support to the idea if you're going to have taller buildings that you need to increase the rear yard setbacks.
Right, a lot of people were objecting to what's going on now, or the possibility of what's going on now, that would create a canyon
down there.
But yet, if you would increase the setback for a one-story building, you would certainly minimize the square footage of that building, and it wouldn't create it. Yeah.
You know, so maybe one thing to do would be to say for a one or a one-and-a-half-story building.
I think that, you know, everything we've talked about, well thought and good, but I think the best we should do right now, the most we should do right now, is refer everything to the comprehensive plan change and make notes of what we've talked about so far and suggested in our suggestions.
Okay.
I would agree with
Jim. You're there, Marty.
I'm there.
I think so. I think who's going to be in charge of this comprehensive plan review? Is it going to be an independent committee that the commissioner set up, or is it going to be
The last commission? I mean, that's it's at the will of the town commissioners.
Yeah, so
I
we
think.
Need to
the
we
last
need to wait for that. I mean, that's my feeling.
Okay.
I agree. And
John?
And
yeah, I would respond.
Okay. So I mean, in answer to your question, Marty, the last time we did this, the chair of the planning commission was chair. doesn't have to be that way, but was chair of the Comprehensive Plan Development Working Group. There were members of that, some of, but not all of the Planning Commission members were on that group. There were, I believe, two commissioners who were on that group, and there were some outside people who were official members of the group, and there were some outside people who were ad hoc members of the group.
I think that, yeah, the University of Delaware participated.
University of Delaware.
I was in on there at the very beginning, and then my term expired, and then now I'm back, but I think that's how it went down. Just exactly the way they described.
We hired a planner.
Yeah, and they hired a consultant.
I can't imagine that commissioners would want to do it without some of the expertise on the Planning Commission, in other words, at the table here, but just as they did in the previous time. I don't know. I mean, you know, it is kicking the. I mean, you know, I think we could be proactive here, but I think we'd be spinning our wheels. I mean, certainly, if an individual like David were to write up, these are the ideas that we have, I think that's a sufficient piece of paper to go forward to whatever the group is that's going to be doing this to get them started or get them looking at some things.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be any kind of a recommendation from the commissioners, from the Planning Commission.
The question should be, I mean, I would like it to be a recommendation from the Planning Commission rather than a recommendation from me.
Yeah.
So, sensing that this is the way we want to go, why don't you all send me your suggestions, your ideas, your concepts, and why don't we put a deadline at Sunday evening?
So if you don't get any, we don't have any ideas, right?
So if I get nothing, you have no ideas.
I'm not going to send you anything because I don't want to send any ideas forward. I think we should kick.
Fine.
The only idea I have that wasn't expressed here is that I think I would be very reluctant to create new zoning districts in the town because we have whatever, 6 already or something like that, say 7, which is a large number of zoning areas for a town the size that we are, and I don't want to make it 8 or 9 zones.
Okay.
And but we might move some boundaries around because as the town matures, they get a characteristic that might assimilate them into another of the boundary.
So you might take the ocean block of the entire town and make that RR.
Yeah, right, something like that, rather than create an RR2 zone or whatever you might want to do.
Okay.
But, I'd have to study it a little bit, but that would be just my inclination to try to stick with what we have and grow some of the districts, maybe, and shrink some of the districts. To be more reflective of their current characteristics. We did that actually in the back of Ruttertown when we said that residential area, we did it last December, it seems to be continuing as a residential area, and let's get the ambiguity out of that zone and make it part of the residential area. So,
Mark, did you have?
I may have missed the question. Maybe I suggest that you provide the commissioners and the town manager recommendation on timelines.
That would be good.
And that I think the state mandates that we do this with a certain
okay.
schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that more than the ideas of what needs to change, it could just be a timeline, your recommended timeline, because it could be that we should be appointing this group soon.
Yeah. Okay.
Or it could be this is a next year issue. And a timeline to sort of say what's the finish, when we have to do it, and then what needs to happen, when. Because it could be that it's next month or 2 months from now when this group needs to be put together.
Okay.
Which I have no idea.
It's a great idea, yeah. Mark. I was going to add, if we sent something for you, if you're saying, okay, we're going to defer this until it's time, if you add that schedule. If that schedule does show something like that, and you're going to look for solicit for help or look for resources within the state that could assist us in this, you know, we could start looking for those this spring. See what I'm saying? Get a jump on it. Then we don't get our backs up against the wall in 2017 and get in a little rush. So that's a great idea.
So I guess the question is, does this commission want that to be a commission-approved memorandum with timelines and ideas, or do you want it to be from me as the outgoing chair? And yeses. That
yes,
was an
yes. I believe that so it'd be a lot easier for the chair to represent the committee on this, because I think we would like to get this before the commission as soon as possible, commissioners. Now we could send it over. Literally, we could send it over next week as a draft, as a recommendation.
What would delay a recommendation from the entire commission?
We meet on the 7th, and we could ratify. Yeah. I mean, we could discuss and vote on a recommendation on this.
And you're asking us to give you our ideas by Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Mike's already given you his ideas. I'm ready to give you my ideas. So I don't know if there's any major changes that we just can't make it a planning commission recommendation. Nothing. You know, just
Right. Everybody's
ideas are out there. You know, this, we just make it a planning commission recommendation. I'm along. I agree, basically, with Marty too. Is that I don't think we need to create another zoning classification, but I think that the boundaries should be changed or could be changed if we did a good study and analysis of what's going on and how does it fit into the current zoning. And that would be my recommendation. The recommendation that I would send right now is that we study the areas and see if zoning boundary lines should be changed.
David, I just want to also point out there's items in the comp plan that don't have to do with zoning.
Right.
That have never been addressed. So it's not just the comp plan has to do with financial sustainability, as an example, and other things that are not necessarily zoning. So we need to make sure that the group has expertise in areas than just zoning.
Okay, so I will, if you have input, send it to me. I'll come back on the 7th with a memo, and we can, you all can decide if you want it to be from me or from the commission, and we'll send it on to.
Yeah, it should be from the commission.
I think there's always.
Sure. But you can wrap.
Okay.
He could do it.
If you could do it for the commission, bro.
Thank
you. Really
you
should come for the commission.
So then what we're basically agreeing on is that you're going to draft up a memorandum to send to the commissioners on possible changes to the area.
To the areas and maybe the zoning standards.
The zoning lines.
Right.
Okay.
So we get to the, so it's quarter after 11 more or less, and I don't mind, we're kind of here until 12. I don't mind staying later. There are two issues related to, and again, my hope is this is one final, we've been discussing definitions now for seems like forever. And we were asked to do this by the town commissioners. And so we had some really good detailed discussions. And at the last meeting, I had some takeaway items and did some cleanup. And so there's amendments to what's currently in Chapter 1, Section 115 and 116. Which are the definitions. We were going to import the definitions from other areas of the town code, other chapters, into Chapter 1, so the definitions existed there as a one place to go. We were moving things from Chapter 1 that were requirements, not definitions, into Chapter 185, and so there's some of that. And I sense that the primary issue here, so my hope would be one last time through all of this stuff, see where we want to go, I'll get some instruction, clean it up, and if it looks like we are all on the same page, then we would have a public hearing and possibly vote on the recommendation of the commissioners at the next meeting. It seems to me that really the only issue, the only substantive issue, has to do with 2.5 stories, this issue of 2.5 stories. I got one letter from the public, which I forwarded to everybody, and I assume it's on record at Town Hall as well. I would like to just read a few excerpts from it. Hopefully I'll take less than 2 minutes, and just to kind of refresh, you know, because I think it's one part of the side, but it's, you know, it's fairly balanced. The intent, so excerpts, this was written by Rick Judge, 9 New Orleans Street and 10 Chesapeake Street. The intent for the half story was to eliminate the large box houses, and together with a reduced fire control oversized homes in the north end of Dewey Beach. The intent was not to limit usable living space on the third level, nor to make the half story attic space. The half story was an architectural tool to maintain the character and style and eliminate the box house. He goes on to say that he expresses concerns that the definition currently, the definition, the working definition proposed for a story limits a dormer area to less than 50% of the third level square footage, and that this encourages building a larger home to create 50% usable square footage and still have half a story. It also contradicts the original intent of the half story being an architectural tool to enhance the design of the home. Gable and shed dormers are a classic Dewey Beach home. There are examples, he points out, of houses in town where dormers comprise more than, top floor dormers comprise more than 50% of the story. So his recommendation was to remove the 50% limitation in the distinction between what is defined as a story versus a half story. He then goes on to raise another issue that was raised in July's town meeting during a half story public discussion, where an architect spoke for not restricting regulations too tightly to provide flexibility to have, you know, flat roofs, living roofs, green energy, and a variety of architectural style. You know, we don't want the North End to become a cookie cutter cluster of lookalike homes. He did point out that the future of the North End is likely to become four season houses, you know, which I thought was interesting, and more year-round residents, and that there may be better solutions than a restrictive half-story definition. He suggested eliminating the half-story and restrict the FAR, at least the FAR for living area, to a number lower than 1.0, which it currently is. That would allow architectural style as well as keeping control on oversized homes. His suggestion was 4,500 square feet, which is a FAR of 9. We've heard from many people who, you know, said 0.8 seemed to be a good number, at least 0.8 for condition space, and to make the distinction between condition space and non-condition space. And I mean, if you remember, our code currently defines a deck area that has a roof or overhang or upper story deck, so it's covered, that area is included in the FAR. And, you know, I think that the FAR is to some extent intended to reduce the visual impact. And, you know, does a deck with a, you know, a roof, that seems less intrusive than, you know, four walls fully enclosed. So he ends it by saying, good luck with your mission, and please do not restrict the gable and shed roof designs.
He just wants to remove the 50% from the definition under story, correct? Where you get to
items. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I would like to do is start with the four-page definition cleanup amendments to Chapter 185 zoning.
Okay. Find it here. I have it.
So what I did here was basically take those sections in the definitions that had things that we had, that we considered more zoning standards or zoning requirements or zoning regulations, and move them into the zoning code. And this is more or less verbatim.
Filling station. You're on the filling station?
The filling station, right.
I don't have any problems with that.
Now, in point of fact, we had decided that this came from the automotive service station definition. But in Table 2 of Chapter 185, it refers to filling stations. So I think this should be changed to filling station. So then there's eateries and home occupation, of which I know we're going to have some discussion, and hotel motels and outdoor service areas. So if we were to go through them one at a time, I would make one administrative change in the second to the last line. Instead of saying automobile parking for a fee, I would say parking motor vehicles for a fee. Because it, you know, might be buses or trucks or, and then the question, it currently says parking or storing of more than one towing vehicle. And I mean, do we really want, I could see one towing vehicle, but do we really want, you know, a filling station that has three tow trucks in it? So, I mean, the current code says two. I would suggest we change it to one, but other.
It doesn't really matter, but I mean, you know, if I was a guy who owned the only Exxon station here, and you're, you know, I haven't seen any tow trucks.
Doesn't store a tow truck on his site.
But I mean, you know, if a one, you know, says two, you're taking away, you're putting in a one. I have no comments to anything until we get down to the home occupation.
Page one. The first. Oh.
Yeah, I don't see that. Beth could change that from two to one in terms of filling station.
I'm sorry?
I don't see the benefit of changing it from two to one, but I mean, things change in the future. I mean, maybe the person that buys it or manages it.
You might have a couple of tow trucks.
Might have a couple of tow trucks.
You want to keep it at two?
I'd like to see. It's not a problem right now. I see it being a problem if you had two trucks.
Okay.
I mean, get rid of those junkers that he's got there. That would be.
He's in violation of the current code with his
storage of vehicles.
Like in our town, you can't have vehicles that are not repaired sitting anywhere. Registered.
That's the issue right now. I would think compliance with the code.
I have a little experience with tow trucks and filling stations. Part owner years and years ago. And I can see where if the person had a filling station and it worked on brakes and whatnot, it's very useful to the business to be financially productive, to have their own tow truck go out and bring the vehicle in and work on it. If you had, I don't see any reason to have two tow trucks, because really the purpose of having a tow truck on site is to accommodate your clients that you're working on in your station. So, you know, their car breaks down, you bring it in, you fix it, and that's the end of your towing business. If you have two tow trucks, you're more inclined to enlarge your business and start doing, you know, accidents, bringing, you know, towing back and forth and bringing in vehicles for storage and things like that. It could, you know, it could go out of control if you increase the number of tow trucks on the site. We've done that. So I would like to see one.
One, Don?
From observation in another part of the world, two tow trucks can work well for a business if they have a larger one to deal with larger vehicles and a more pickup sized one.
That's true.
To deal with your average
so you're two.
Guy in trouble. Yeah, two.
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 I have no...
I don't feel strongly about it.
Don't change it. So we'll just leave it as two.
What I'm thinking is, look, I know Sean and Bing very well over at Exxon. They've never had a tow truck there, and they probably will never have a tow truck there. So if you want to change it and make a recommendation, this is a great time to do it. I mean, if you want to leave it at two, fine. Those guys aren't going anywhere.
One.
I say one.
I would be one.
You're one.
One. So...
Two.
Two.
So we got a tie.
So we're going to leave it. We're going to leave it. We're not going to change it. Okay. So two. Okay. Now, do we want to do anything with any of the other? You know, it says that you cannot. Auto body repairs. They do body repairs. I don't know if they do painting, but they do parking and storing of inoperable wrecked or unregistered vehicles. The question is the town, I'm not ready to change any of this stuff, but...
Who's that code enforcement officer?
You know, I think the town needs to, you know, I don't think Dewey Beach on Dewey Beach's Main Street wants to have a bunch of wrecked cars parked in a service station. So we will just make a note to the town manager that there are violations going on of the existing code. Eateries. So again, this takes the stuff that was language that was largely in Chapter 1, Section 116, and moving it into 185.25(d)(1)(a)(4). And the only editorial comment I have is that under the last item, item F, it says, additionally, approval of an eatery or cabaret shall be any and all other conditions, and I believe that should be operation of any eatery or cabaret shall meet any and all other conditions established by the town commissioners. I mean, it's my typography that was... and I changed, I mean, the existing code says in E and F, things like portable toilets are prohibited. And to parallelize the sentence structure and things, I would just, you know, as an editorial change, say portable toilets shall not be permitted. I don't think it matters from... any other comments on eateries? There is the other comment. My comment on the side, DSK 3, there was a further clause that I didn't copy over that was basically a grandfathering clause. You know, it said that if you have an eatery that was approved to operate under different conditions prior to this date, that you can continue operating like that. And I think that that's just standard, and we don't have that clause in you know, we don't have that clause for the restaurants, and we don't have that clause for other conditional uses. And so I just thought that that's just, I think that's understood.
I guess. I mean, I saw your note there, and I'm assuming that the town attorney is
he's going to say if they've been approved. I mean, they were approved under...
Like, for example, you have something out in the parking lot of starboard, you know, and they put the... Did they put porta potties out there once, you know? Is that allowed?
Yeah. Well, but that's not...
That's under expansion of premises.
Yeah, but that's not a, that's not an eatery. You know, this is kind of like, I mean, you know, if you submit a... You know, if you get a building permit and then the zoning code changes, you don't have to meet the new zoning code.
Right.
I mean, and I just, I see no reason to have this here, and...
I don't either, so, you know, the only comment for discussion would be just have
an
attorney look at it before, you know, we add this in, just to make sure we're not creating a problem.
I think we would create a problem if we put it in, because it's not here for other conditional uses.
Okay, got it.
Is there a differentiation between grandfathering and non-conforming use? Or are they the same?
Well, I believe that anything that's grandfathered is non-conforming.
Is there a provision in the code that says that there is a, is the non-conformity designed to be in perpetuity, or is the non-conforming aspect, is there a sunset provision for non-conformity?
I don't believe our code currently has sunset provisions.
That came up with
the commissioners could, you know, could do that, but I mean, currently, I believe
that came up several years ago where we had a provision that we could. One of the former town attorney recommended that we consider a sunset provision in some of this. That was perfectly legal to do that.
Moving forward, you can put sunset provisions
sure.
in, but it's hard to. Sunset.
Forward.
It's hard to.
You can't go back, but you can go back forward.
Okay, we'll probably keep this out, but I'll ask Brad if he thinks if we should put it in. Home occupation. There are as you. So to some extent, I restructured the home occupation thing. There was a whole list of things, and I removed the list, and I added them all together kind of in a sentence, or a list in a sentence, to simplify things a little. There was some discussion as to, I mean, D is an either or. As to who should be permitted to have a home occupation, whether it was the owner of the property who was also a resident, which Mike, you were in, Mike Gerskevich was supportive of, or if it could be a renter who was a resident.
I kind of, I won't say I waved on that, but I've given some thought with some issues. First of all, I want to go on record so people understand there's a difference between working from home and a home occupation. Many of my good friends work from home, and relatives, they work for major banks, and they do all their work at home. You know, there's no evidence whatsoever that they're working out of their house. They're working on their computer. And I have friends who work for large pharmaceutical companies that work from home. They go to AstraZeneca maybe once a month and have a meeting. Other than that, they work from home. I'm not opposed to that type of operation at all. If a person is working from their home, great. You know, I mean, that's the American dream now. It's part of the American dream, work from your house. But that's different than a home occupation. Home occupation, and Dave, I think you started to, you know, summarize some good points here, but I've got some additional thoughts I'd like to bring into play here.
Sure.
You know, so saying that, again, I'm repeating myself.
Well,
you know,
I think that maybe just to put my perspective on it, if you're working, the occupation is really where you're drawing clients in, like a dentist's office or a doctor's office or something.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
So that the traffic in a residential area is a concern.
Right.
And usually the distinction I've seen is if a person is a resident, if the doctor resides, lives there,
and has the office, then that's acceptance, because he's a resident, he's part of the community, rather than somebody that comes, commutes in, right, in the morning to run it as a business.
Right.
And so I see that.
But Mike Periscavich makes the distinction between if I own the building and have my dental practice in the building versus I rent the building and have my dental practice and my residence in the building.
Right. And
I sense you don't make that distinction.
I don't make that distinction, but I don't know.
That's basically what the two options under D is, to try and...
Yeah, I think we should make a distinction.
Try and...
You think what, Jim?
I think we should make a distinction. I remember some years ago on our property on Clayton Street, there was a homeowner across the street that ran a eBay business. So you had UPS trucks coming in all hours of the day, boxes being brought in and stored. They did occupy the home, but they were running a business.
Right.
So, and that's where I think would fall under your definition of a home occupation.
Right, and under home occupation. I actually copied one I'm more familiar with than anything, Newcastle County's Unified Development Code, where they do allow home occupation under accessory uses. You have to, in certain zonings. And they've got two or three pages of restrictions that are placed on home occupation. They address parking, deliveries, signage, number of employees, who can be an employee, various things like that. And there's, I think there's a, if we are going to allow home occupations, we should think it out and incorporate some of these ideas. I made a copy for everyone. You can just think of who would be your worst neighbor if this, if we allowed it. You could have a massage parlor next to you. But I'm not against massages, but you know, somebody could be living there and put up a little open neon sign in the window and have, you know, customers coming in all day. You know, you got to limit that. And things like that.
I think what we need to make is a distinction between people that telework, really, which
right.
is what I think the other definition right. is, and versus people that routinely conduct some sort of a commercial business.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Newcastle County did a good job allowing for home occupations, but restricting them so that they are non-distinguishable from other houses on the street. Some signs, you know, but maybe some areas some professions aren't even allowed to have signs. Some are allowed to have a 1 foot square sign. Parking has to be off site, or you have to provide for parking. You can't park when, you know, you have to have adequate parking. Even with a daycare, let's just say your neighbor decides to open up a daycare, and, you know, you're going to have people coming in the morning, at night, and it's allowed in the house, and then they even distinguish in there, they're not allowed to, let's see what it is, how they say it, family daycare. No structural or decorative modifications that will alter the exterior residential characteristics of the dwelling. Now, you know, I'm just going up and down the road and seeing some of the new daycares that they got all kinds of animation going on out there that makes everybody happy, but it's not characteristic with the neighborhood, and it is just... You know,
right, and they'd like to put up a 9 foot fence so the kids stay in the yard.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not consistent with the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I would offer is we could talk about it today, David, or I could give you copies of their unified code and everyone can take a look at it.
So I am quite happy, if everybody else is, with getting input from Mike and putting it together to... Okay, because, I mean, I also tried to deal with this issue. I hadn't thought of the distinction between a home occupation versus the working at home. I mean, I was sensitive to the fact that...
I missed it myself. You know, I mean, you know, I'm just making a note here real quick, but I think, yeah. Mike, if you're offering to provide some input based on the county's code, you know, about familiar with that.
I'll work with Mike to get us something for the next meeting.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to people working out of their house.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's the American dream now. It's great.
Yeah.
But when you allow a home occupation, you open up the door for all kinds of...
I don't know what the code says. I don't know what code says up there, but also when, if you're looking at the second part of G that you suggested,
F and G should have been the same. Yeah, right.
Well, make sure you think about like an Amway type thing where people, you know, they actually buy, they buy the food, they bring it in, and then they sell it to the people. So whatever you guys come up with to regulate that.
Right. You know. So there was the option. The current code says no commodity shall be stored or sold except such as has been made on the premises.
Right. And somebody could be, I could not almost guarantee, I would bet that there could be with 200 or so residents living in Dewey, 2,000 property owners, about what the numbers are, that there's somebody within that 200 that might be an Amway rep now. I don't know.
Well, I wasn't thinking of the Amway, but I was thinking of, you know, somebody who, you know, kind of buys and sells eBay stuff. And, and so they're, you know, which doesn't bring people in necessarily, right. But, you know, does have the truck showing up from time to time.
The present code says not of a nature to cause a private or public nuisance. And, you know, that's pretty vague. And I think what you were asking Mike to do is to elaborate what, and more specifically what's allowed and what's not allowed, rather than just
exactly
right. But certainly, if the next door neighbor said, there is this constant problem from my neighbor, that's a private nuisance, and you know, if many neighbors, then that's presumably a public nuisance, and if the town manager gets complaints,
I agree. If we can be more specific,
things can be narrowed down.
There's a lot of precedent for this kind of wording, like Michael has there. We ought to take advantage of it.
So the one question that we still have, I think, and I will work with Mike to get some of his language in here for our next time, is, and I would like to maybe get some closure on this. So we've taken working at home out of the equation.
Right, you're allowed to work at
home. Yeah, you can work at home.
Right.
Whether you rent or...
But you'd be more clear about that so our town manager doesn't get a headache, get a call, says, somebody's telecommuting.
Well, and people who telecommute from home don't have a business license.
Well, that was the question I had. Because I don't know, Mark, you are our town manager, you sign off on the business licenses. Do we have anybody, do you recall, that has a home occupation that signs off? Does that...
I don't know.
I don't think there's anybody that's ever filed for a business license either.
Which, you know, I don't know if anybody has a home occupation.
Well, that depends whether they're doing business in Dewey Beach or elsewhere, though, doesn't it? I mean, if they're working at home.
It's not working at home, it's having a home occupation.
I don't know that anybody's
Does the law firm that's... Well, that's not a home occupation. That's not a... The question I think we need to resolve, I would like to resolve now, we can discuss it again or not, for a home occupation as it's going to be defined and not working at home, do you have to own the property to be able to have a home occupation?
Or are you trying to say live in it?
Or in either case, it has to be your residence.
Right.
I don't see the advantage of restricting it to an owner, because a renter would have to have the same restrictions, whether it's the size of the shingle outside or the number of the traffic and so forth that are going to be the same between a renter and a owner. So I don't see the advantage to the community. I mean, the community doesn't get an advantage by having an owner there versus a renter. I don't think it makes a difference. So I would say that we don't require an ownership. We just require compliance with these signage and traffic and parking and so forth.
I would be in favor of going that way if we included the restriction, so to speak, that would control parking, control signage, control what kind of use is actually considered a home occupation. Storage and things like that. You know, if we incorporated enough of these to my satisfaction, that whoever rents that house is not going to be undistinguishable from anybody else on the street. It's going to look like a house, you know, and it's not going to create any traffic problems, not going to create any parking problem, signage. You know, houses don't have signage unless it's welcome to my beach house or something like that. You know, things like that. If you walk down the street and you can't tell whether somebody's living in there or having a home occupation, I wouldn't have a problem with a renter doing that. But if we don't put enough of these in there, then I would.
For certain businesses in other areas, in our zoning code. And this may have to have certain restrictions also. Okay.
I think so. I think it should be limited to what can be a home occupation.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
All right.
You'll get me an electronic copy of
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And with the areas that you highlighted that you think are
mm-hmm.
We should include, and I'll add them. The next item is hotel and motel. And this is probably should be inserted under 185.25D, which is conditional uses. And again, this is essentially language from the current definition of hotel motels. With some amendment to item H, where the current code said may make available efficiencies, which shall consist of, and then some stuff. And this says the recommended language for here was does not provide self-contained suites or groups of rooms with separate cooking and sleeping, except that it may offer self-contained efficiency units, see definitions in section 116, where we do define efficiency units. And I think that the ordinance is ordinance 420 that was enacted 3/8/2000, but I'll get Jim to confirm that. And I think that the may continue operations provided it kind of in the top section at the end is kind of redundant. I just scratched that out. Shall conform to the following. Are there any other?
For that, as well as the outside service area, just if you're going to ask a question about grandfathering that we talked about earlier,
yeah, you know,
ask it for both those. You know, the whole
you know, clearly we grandfather hotels and motels, and you know, I don't think we need to. You know,
that's what I figured. Okay.
You know, that's why I thought we don't need this language for eateries. No, it was amended in 2000.
Yeah.
And then, so outside service areas, you know, 185.25D1A3 says any commercial outdoor open air operation or outside service area. And then currently in 116, it has a bunch of restrictions, and so I just said provided that and then pulled the restrictions in here. And,
good.
So I think we're good with that part. We'll get Mike's inputs into home occupation and put this into an ordinance. So then we're left with Chapter 1, Article 3, Sections 115 and 116. And I apologize that this is really a pretty awful-looking document. But I, you know, I felt it was more important to provide the sausage rather than.
It helps.
So the first item I would like to, so as a cleanup issue, we're going to relabel automotive service station, call it a filling station. I think the issue. The primary issue I think we need to deal with is the half story and story issue. And you can see that page 10, half story. So I'm gonna get some water and so why don't you guys think about half story and story? And we'll be back in a minute.
Rick's memo, you know, basically. You know,
talking about 50%. Can you hang on a second?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to step into
okay.
The management.
You're just thinking out loud.
Yeah, I'm thinking out loud.
Oh, I thought we were supposed to continue our work session here in the absence of David, but he doesn't want that to happen. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Very controlling.
So you're going to be here March, February, March?
I think our term expires. I don't know what we're doing. David and I and Don. Term expires.
Oh, well, Don?
You want to be reappointed, right?
Yeah.
It's not.
I think the commission can run with
45.
Yeah.
I don't know where they are.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've lost my karma now.
You chastise him for thinking out loud.
Well, no, I thought he was actually, I thought he was going to dump his buffer and I wanted to.
Yeah.
We're going to try to get something past the chairman. It didn't work. Well, at least that was my plan.
Anecdotally, I was as I was putting some of this together, I used both my dictionary, and I thought I would look to see what Rehoboth Beach does.
Yeah.
And I typed in Rehoboth and building by building code, and I got Rehoboth, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Which might have been more useful than Rehoboth.
Hey, I should have. Tried to learn more about Rehoboth, Massachusetts. It's, anyway, Rehoboth, under half story, Rehoboth Beach uses wall plates rather than knee walls, but I think we picked knee walls, and maybe something good to do would be to define knee wall in the definitions, and then it's crystal clear. So, half story, Mike Harmer. Or story. I mean, it.
I'm going to defer the memo that Rick had sent with eliminating 50% of some of his ideas. I like his ideas. So, if you eliminate 50%, that would probably suit the needs that he was discussing in the definition of story, not half story. Because the two relate to each other. You got to go back to the story to do the half story. That's where I'm at.
I think I agree with that memo that Rick sent. Not that I completely understood it, I don't think, but I think that's a reasonable approach. Just eliminate the 50% requirement.
I think we should eliminate the half story, to be honest with you. I think we should just go with the far 4,000 square feet of.
But we're not changing the FAR now.
I know, but I'm just saying that would just, I don't buy the half story anyway.
What would you limit it to?
I would limit it to three stories.
Three stories.
But with the condition that the FAR be included.
But we're not going to.
No, I understand.
Right, I mean, this, again, this is the.
I think the fear is that, to be very blunt, if you go to Chesapeake Street and you look at the two houses that are right on for King Charles Road Avenue, and they're box-like in a sense of rectangular. that if you had 10 of those up there or 20 of those up there, that would be a loss to the aesthetics. And, but if you had a house like that that was trimmed up a little bit into our so-called half-story.
Well, if, for example, the one that's directly across the street from that, which is, well, it's probably only 1.5 stories, rather.
Yeah, then you, if you had 10 of those up there, it would not be an issue, would not be a confused, it would not feel like a canyon effect, I guess you might say. I think that's the distinction, at least as I see it.
So, Jim, your point is that to some extent the recommendations on NR zoning is to eliminate half story and reduce FAR. But we're not
there, but that's where ultimately, where I would go.
And I suspect a lot of us would go there too, but at this point we're keeping FAR. The FAR is going to be one until the commissioners decide to do something about it.
Right.
And
how do we accomplish the 50% elimination of 50%?
We can just recommend that comes out of this definition for story.
There you go. And then we're going to do our memo next month to talk about the comprehensive plan, and we'll look at all that when that comes.
Mike or Don, any thoughts on this one way or the other?
I'm with Jim on the changing the, you know, getting rid of the 2.5 story. I was impressed by that architect at that last meeting. He gave his presentation. He gave a thorough, I think, objective presentation on today's type of home that can be built, you know, and still not, you know, become a nuisance on the block. I was really impressed with him. So it kind of opened up my ears to that. But for today, I think we narrowed down on this 50%. And the definition.
Yeah. Don?
I'm thinking specifically about a new house that's being built on Salisbury Street. You could argue that it's a 1.5 story house, but in reality, it's a second story. It just looks like there's a slope roof from the front, but in the back, it's, you can't call it a dormer. It's a story. Okay. I don't see the reason to have a definition of a half story if you're going to do that. So I'd eliminate the half story and just go with the story definition.
But the problem with that right now is story says, you know, 50%.
That's in resort residential.
Dormers,
isn't it?
So,
yeah. NR.
That's not in the NR district.
No, that's a resort residential.
Yeah. Don, I think it applies. The easiest way to do this would be, you know, two-step process is to wait until the comprehensive plan, but for now to say that the dormers aren't restricted, basically, is what we're saying. Right now we're limiting 50%, right? So under the story definition under item D, you're talking about eliminating that item D. That's what we're talking about. For now, knowing that we're going to go to the FAR and, you know, what we want to do in the Northern District is all coming. The way to get these definitions to the simplest state right now is to do what Rick's memo is suggesting. That's what I'm supporting. I think it's a reasonable request. And it's going to be a two-step process. This is step one. It's maybe not the perfect solution, but it gets the definitions into the, separates the regulation out of the definitions in a way, you know, we're putting filling stations and things and puts all the definitions, updates them as they wanted to do in 2008 and gives us a starting point to move forward to the comprehensive plan. So. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Right.
So, I sense that we're going to, at least to bring closure to the half-story discussion, we're going to keep knee walls, we're going to define knee walls, and we're going to remove the 50% restriction in the distinction between a story and a half-story. So, a half-story would be a partial story under a gable or hip roof, excluding mansard and gambrel roofs, the knee walls of which on at least two directly opposite sides or not more than 3 feet above the floor of such story. And we, you know, I guess I should find a picture of that, because so that when we send this to the commissioners with a transmission memo, it will have a little picture. Any other discussions about any of the other items? I mean, you know, some of this is, you know, some of the amendments are strictly wordsmithing. I'm trying to see what my comments say. You know, I had some problems with the use of lot or parcel, when it should just be a lot and when it should be a lot or parcel. And I tried to, I mean, I would like to go through that one more time.
The efficiency definition?
Well, let's, what if, yeah, sure, efficiency definition.
I still struggle with the 300 square feet. I know that's what's been in there, but when you're writing these things,
page seven. Page seven, efficiency motel unit.
Yeah. Back, I don't want to sound like a broken record. Serco, I think, has more 300s and 480s, and they're all efficiencies. All right. Whatever they're trying to do down in Rubbertown and all that, you know, if you're going to put a definition in there, you want to make sure that you're not creating a headache for the rest, for town building officials, you know, going forward. So if you're defining 300 square feet here in the definition, that's an old definition, you know, back from 2008. Just, I think you should think about that number to make sure that's exactly where you want it to be. Just because that's what it was before doesn't make it right.
Right, and I, you know, to some extent,
I don't know what the number is.
I mean, that number has been different over. I mean, the number has changed over time, basically due to politics, and yeah. You know, it got bigger and then it got smaller. And
I want to say something like commonly 300 square feet or something. I mean, could be less or more.
I didn't, from what I was reading with some of the things that are going on, I don't want to bring a big controversy or anything into this, but you know, with whatever's going on with the efficiencies over there in Rotterdam, is there going to be a conflict between what we try to push through this spring versus what they're doing there? And if that number, that square footage or whatever they're trying to do, fits in the 300, okay.
Well, I mean,
am I mixing apples and oranges here?
What we do today probably won't have any influence on that.
Okay.
I assume they're building permits that are prepared or submitted or going to be submitted soon before, you know. So if we do a final on February 7th, the commissioners are going to act on this in March, and I assume there's going to be building permits before then. And so
300.
So they have to deal with 300.
300 is a nice size efficiency. I mean, it's enough to get the job done for efficiency. The 400, they have small efficiencies and large efficiencies at Serco. One's like 300, the other one might be like 4 something. So if you want to leave it 300, I'm good with 300. I just want to have a discussion to see if anyone else knew of any other numbers that, or other areas or things coming that if we leave the 300, is that going to cause a headache for the town officials? I don't know of any myself. I just wanted to bring it up just in case. Just because it's 300 in 2008 doesn't make it right today. 300 works for me.
You know,
can you speak to the square foot area of those condos at Rotterdam?
What's currently built?
No, the one bedroom, one bath units.
But we're not talking about one bedroom, one bath. We're talking about efficiencies.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't know.
Which is a zero bedroom, one bath.
I don't know the square footage.
I guess to make it easy, David, if leave it at 300 the way it's written, and ask our town attorney if he knows of any conflicts that this could present for us going forward, you know.
Well, again, they're grandfathered, so.
Okay,
they're right. Grandfathered. I mean, this has
300 is a nice size efficiency. I mean, you can fit a little kitchenette, you can put a Murphy bed,
And you can have a TV watching area right there where the bathroom
is. That, is that the oceanfront one down there, the Road Surf Club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stayed in that. That's nice. Yeah.
The small efficiencies, they have smaller bars. Largers are 400 and some, but you don't really need a 400.
I mean, I know that there now are, I mean, there's a new definition for micro condos or something that is like 350 square feet. That's kind of a standard size.
My question is, why are we calling it a motel unit?
You know, this had to do with the regulations of, you know, they didn't want motels rooms to be, they had to be smaller than some size. And then there was concerns that when, you know, the motels, when motels were being converted to condos, there was some, this is what we have, and
I mean, to me, a motel is, you know, to pull up and, you know, the old style motel, you get out of your car and walk in there. I, you know, I'm just saying.
They're about 300. I mean, you know,
or smaller.
You stay at the Surf Club, those rooms are the smaller.
But the concern is the future hotel, well, the hotel rooms, Surf Club rooms, they aren't motels.
True.
It's a different.
You're not building motels anymore.
So why are we saying motel?
So you would like to say efficiency hotel / motel unit, and that at least solves that.
You know, there used to be a hotel over on Route 1. Where was that?
There's not building motels.
On the highway.
I don't know. There's a motel out of there.
Okay, so.
By the store.
Take a motel out of there.
Yes.
Motel.
Well, other places in the code talk about an efficiency. I'm going to have to see whether or not that screws us up with all of this other stuff, but
is that what you were saying, Mike? Then you were like, why do we have a motel in there?
Right. We're not really thinking of motel necessarily. Right. We're thinking the big
efficiency.
Okay.
Condo unit.
Well, how did we come to 300?
I don't remember how we came to 300, but to some extent this has to do with, you know, whether you're classified as a hotel room or you're classified as a dwelling unit for purposes of determining density and parking requirements.
Well, I think the 300 square feet is to put a limit on it, because if you go above 300 square feet, then you get into parking requirements and these other things that are specified here. Yeah. Another, for a dwelling unit is different than efficiency. Efficiency, you don't need a parking space anymore.
So I will think what we might do regarding the term. Is it an efficiency unit? Is it an efficiency hotel / motel unit? Is it also fine? I will take care of that.
That's a headache. Sorry to give that to you.
No, that's good. Any other comments?
I just glancing through them again. I mean, I think I don't know the necessity of changing, because I think the state would override, or federal government would override some of these definitions, but the dune line definition shall mean a row of dunes which may blend in with a berm or berms which are fairly parallel to the ocean.
Yeah, I know.
Roughly parallel to the ocean and serve as a protected barrier.
Do you want to get us a better definition?
Well, the state, DENRC, has,
you want to get,
has a dune line. I mean, they actually had plans recorded with coordinates on the state coordinate system that shows you their dune line.
Right.
They call a dune line, and they prohibit building to a point within that dune line.
Right, and that's the building restriction line.
So maybe
we should
the state's DENREX dune line.
Do you want to?
I can get you that.
You want to get us that? You know, I'm quite happy to do that.
No matter what we say to dune line.
You're right.
Was,
I mean,
the state's going to come down and tell you. And then the other one is the wetlands. Again, I don't think.
So I'd look briefly on, I mean, DENREC defines wetlands as an area of land that is wet during the growing season, including areas designated as salt and brackish marsh and freshwater tidal marsh.
That's correct. It's more complicated than that, but
I was kind of disappointed with their definition.
Yeah, well, you've never been involved in a wetland dispute. right tonight.
But this is as designated by, including areas designated by DENREC, and so, you know, if they designate...
All the problems with wetlands is a little simple one-liner. Really, I mean, that's what's interesting about it, isn't it?
Yeah. How about if I come up with something and suggested. I'm thinking that,
you know, I have no ownership.
Can
to
we come up with something different than DENREC? If
I don't
it's
think
more
so.
Restrictive, I don't know that we can. If the state funds it, why would it? I don't know. I think there would be a conflict, and I think the state's definition would trump our definition.
Well, if we were to define something as a wetland that DENREC would not regulate as a wetland, I think we could do that, but I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, you can always create your own environmental sensitive areas. You might not call it a wetland, but you can call it environmental sensitive. In other words, steep slopes in a lot of townships and municipalities consider steep slopes an environmentally sensitive area, and they don't allow you to build one when they restrict how you build one. And DENREC has nothing to do with that, neither does the federal government. But when you get into wetlands, the Corps of Engineers is the final person who you have to convince that it's a wetland or it's not a wetland. So maybe we should think along those lines.
You can make it more strict, but not less strict, right?
I don't think you have to make it more strict.
You don't want to be pretty strict.
I don't think you could.
Okay.
It's pretty strict as it is.
You can create a buffer from the wetlands, which I don't know if we have in our ordinance yet or not, if you think we need one.
Yeah, that might not be a bad idea at some point.
Because the Corps of Engineers is very strict on regulating and defining what wetlands are, right? But towns and counties have imposed a buffer area for most wetlands.
The community I live in has a buffer.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I just looked at that wetlands. I don't think it's ever be a problem because you have to go through the Corps of Engineers anyhow to prove to them that it's not a wetland.
Anyway,
I'm
welcome to clean it up. Any other? So let me go through my list of So, some of these definitions I pulled in from, I've changed what was in the current code to use what was in Chapter 101, which we talked about, and so those are annotated as comments. Comment 7 on page 3, bed and breakfast. So it currently is an owner-occupied private home. Mm-hmm. And I wondered whether or not we wanted to change that to an owner-occupied dwelling unit or dwelling or, I mean... Right, because I mean, I have a 4-bedroom townhouse attached.
Okay.
I guess that's a private home.
It's all private home, though, wouldn't it?
I guess you're right. So I guess I read private home as a detached single family, but it doesn't say detached, so it is a private home. So I'm good with that. So it also says provide, and you know, we don't have any bed and breakfast in town right now, so I don't care why I care about this, but it currently says for transient guests for compensation, and I wondered whether we should change that to transient patrons rather than guests for, you know, because, and then would one provide, so transient is less than 30 days, and so, I mean, would we, bed and breakfast for somebody who gets a seasonal rental, or is that not a business that bed and breakfast should be in, or am I overthinking this?
I think we're overthinking this.
Okay. This
discussion came up a long time ago.
You know,
with the Berry family that had the bed and breakfast, and they were following the county requirements and definitions from what they explained to us back then.
So I will just we will do nothing.
Right.
So under boats, comment 8. So I added the term boat does not include inflatable rafts used primarily by bathers within 50 feet of the ocean or bay shoreline. I mean, the question is, do we want to regulate inflatable rafts, some of which are larger than 4 feet in length? Do we want to regulate them as boats?
No, I don't think we do.
And so...
Leave it alone.
Like the big round little things people sit on out there on the beach. And they
but right now, inflatable rafts are included under the definition of boats. So, I mean, this was to remove, you know, inflatable rafts that are, you know... Not to say you can have a, you know, a rigid inflatable that you're going to use to sail across the bay. Well, that might be, you know, that's a boat. But
well, a Zodiac is
An inflatable, but
it's an
okay.
Inflatable, but it's not a raft. It's a boat.
All right, let's see.
So cabarets again. We don't have any cabarets. I don't know why I care, but. The current language for cabarets says that cabarets must cease operation on Sundays no later than 11 p.m. That's what it says. And I suggested alternative language that said by 11 p.m. except on Fridays and Saturdays when operations may continue to 1 a.m. of the following day. So that has them close at 11 p.m.
What's wrong with 11 p.m.? Because we don't even have it. Why are we extending hours?
Well, it makes no comment about when closing is on. I mean, I guess on when closing is at... So you would just leave it?
I'd just leave it.
Okay. Drive-ins. This is page 6. I mean, I found this kind of an awkward... Do we need to define drive-ins? This is drive-in food establishment. I mean, we don't have any, and I guess we could have some. But, I mean, it'd be kind of cool if the shops...
The old hot shops.
You know, if all of the... You know, if all those places would have, you know, some kind of shared wait staff with roller skates, and if you had a parking place that bring your pizza slices and...
I think if we are going to allow it, we should give it some more thought about what some regulations about it.
Well, this just, I mean, but the definition currently is, I mean, this is just a definition. I thought the definition was awkward because it wasn't clear if the server had to be seated in a car or if the person being served. So you're fine with that. I'm fine with that. For the language for flood zones, you asked that I include the zones in that. This is page 8. And I actually took the language out of 101, which had the designations in them. Private garage. This is garage, private on page 9. The current code says... So the definition of a private garage is not more than 4 automobiles. I mean, do we care if somebody has a... larger garage?
Well, actually...
I'm thinking of some...
There are some right now that I'm thinking on Clayton Street. You can probably park 3 cars, probably 6 cars, in some of the spots. Because it really goes all the way across underneath.
But those are carports.
Well, I mean, they're partially enclosed. I don't know.
I mean, right. So is that not a private garage, or is that...
I would say it's a private garage.
So I'm just suggesting we delete the, you know, not more than 4 cars.
Would that be for the personal use of the Is that like an accessory use for that?
No, it's part of the development. It's the these are houses that are.
I think private garages
that
are wrong.
That are on pilings, and then they're parking underneath the house. But they're deep enough that you can probably put, you know, 6-7 cars.
I guess.
You know, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it's a permitted accessory use as a private garage.
It's an accessory use. And the accessory use is part of the residential.
Residential. So I just thought, you know, I don't care a whole lot.
Neither do I. I'd rather have them underneath the house than out on the street.
So yeah. Do we want to delete that or do we want to do nothing?
Delete the what part there?
Delete four.
What?
Delete not more than four.
Oh.
I'm just trying to think. If you're in a residential area and you have a home built on pilings and you go, you can actually build your house on 70 feet based upon the current regulations, except maybe the residential would be 68 feet. And 30 some feet, you could put probably 8 to 10 cars under there.
You could.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what a good number is.
I mean,
I'm just saying that the potential is there.
But is that considered a garage if you're parking under your house and it's not enclosed?
Yeah. Well, enclosed or partially enclosed.
Most of them have 1x6s, you know, going, you know, covering it and it's partial. I don't know if that meets the definition or not.
I'm going to make a big deal of it. I'm thinking of one house that is not, I mean, all it has is that, as you said, the house above, it's on piling. It's not, it doesn't have size or anything. They park at least six cars under there.
Yeah.
But I don't consider that a garage. I mean, it's just...
Well, it's not...
They're parking under their house.
Well, the definition is what's partially enclosed.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think they would argue what's the partially enclosed by the floor, by the roof, and by the pilings.
So
can we just delete not more than... Because, I mean, you pointed out many cases where...
It makes sense to have them off the street.
You know, it doesn't fit the definition, and therefore it's not a permitted accessory use to have...
More than four.
But the people who are parking six cars there now, they have guests, and there's no parking on the street, but yet they can get six cars under their house, would be in violation.
Right.
And that would be, to me, foolish.
So that's why I thought we should...
Let's remove the...
Yeah, I agree with Dave, the way David changed it to get rid of the field. Four area ratio there, David, same page? Yeah. Decks, outside decks, by the ordinance in 94, outside decks did not count against it, right?
Correct.
And now we're saying outside decks do. By
the new definition.
You mean on the far? No, I mean, so it would say the quotient obtained by dividing the aggregate gross floor area of all buildings and accessory buildings by the gross lot area. And we're deleting the...
Originally it said excluded from the far was open and unenclosed decks. So you're not... in your new definition, you're not trying to, you want to keep it similar, right? You don't want to count the deck. Right now, we don't count the outside deck.
Right.
Do we count accessory buildings then?
You're counting accessory buildings, but it already encountered them by the second sentence where it's originally said, for the purpose of FAR, garages, utility sheds, etc., shall be considered. And then excluded from it was the unenclosed decks by the ordinance back in the day. It's nothing new that you've added. That's just been part of it for a while. You know, that's what they were carrying in 2008. But that's going to, if I'm not mistaken, that way.
So in the NR district currently, open decks and roof decks, passenger elevators and private garages are not included in the FAR.
Right.
And roof decks and private garages are included in the FAR and... RR. So we could change that to
just leave that last sentence.
We could say other than areas specifically excluded. in table two.
What's the definition of accessory? Do we have one in here for accessory?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like what sheds and stuff, I think, what we're calling.
So.
First one on the list.
Yeah, incidental, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm just looking at connection versus not connected. So if I have a detached shed, that wouldn't be included in the FAR.
Well, it's an accessory building, so it is
it
now,
is.
And it would be in the future.
And it was before anyway. So in 2008, they added that, right? The red shows in 2008 they were proposing adding that the
adding
accessory
that.
Buildings
yeah.
would count against you and that the decks would count against you.
Right, except they what was finally ratified in the zoning code was that in certain circumstances, they don't.
Right.
And so I'm suggesting that we take the first sentence and then add other than areas specifically excluded in table two from the floor area standard.
There.
Okay.
Right.
And
that,
so
that
fixes that. We can change 185 in the future. We don't have to change the definition. Page 16 under story, I was asked to do some background work on this, and I think what is now here is consistent with IBC, with the International Building Code. The language is a little convoluted, but that's what their language is, and at least how I believe that their language would be incorporated into our code. Under structure on page 17, I've added telecommunications equipment and enclosures. I mean, I think that would fit in here. So this is a list of things that are included in the definition of structure: swimming pools, backstops for tennis courts, pergolas, water tanks, towers, open grade steps, sidewalks, stairways, tents, added telecommunications and equipment and enclosures. I mean, we were asked to write regs for telecommunications equipment, you know, a while ago, and that didn't seem a big thing to do. And I think if we put it here, that leaves, I mean, we do have telecommunications equipment on buildings already. I think, you know, this just says it's part of the structure and, you know, it can be. We can put a check in that box.
Check.
And then in. Finally, page 18 for yards. Something that I've always thought was ambiguous or confusing is that the front left corner of my lot, is that in the front yard or is that in the side yard?
Well, it's in the yard.
Right, but is it regulated by... Front is my use of that space restricted by the front yard setback standards and uses or the side yard standards and uses?
Depending whether that's it or the corner lot or not.
Yeah, corners are...
But if you're not a corner lot.
If you're not a corner lot, then typically, unless you're a triangle or shape, you would have two sides. Well,
but where does the side go all the way to the front of the property and all the way to the back of the property? Or does the front go from side to side?
Let me try to answer it this way.
Well, my what I thought was, I would like to say, you know, I would like to add, to avoid confusion, any portion of a yard that lies in both the front yard and side yard shall meet all of the front yard requirements.
I don't know about that, David. Just on the surface, when you just said that, that something's not making too much sense there. I mean, if you're in the front, you're in the front. You're in the side, you're in the side.
Well, so
not if you're in the front, it, you know, the side yard is in the plot.
You know, here's your lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Side yard setback lines, front and rear yard setback lines.
Yeah, side yard stops at the front yard.
So this is the front, and this is the rear. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting here, are you in the front yard setback, or are you in the side yard setback?
Maybe both, but I want to say...
But there are different regulations, different restrictions or standards...
You're exactly right, yeah.
...in the zoning code for front yard and for side yard.
Yeah.
And so...
So, what do you...
I think that...
What do you...
People in the Planning Commission would assume that if you're in this space, you're in the front yard.
I would. I would definitely assume that.
I would too, but I don't know.
Well, and Mike just said that this is the side yard.
Yeah,
and I would agree with
that. That is,
and this is the rear yard.
That's right.
All right, I think that's the way I would roll. I mean, if I'm a land use engineer, that's the way
I can't tell you how many hundreds, maybe thousands of situations we run into like that, and that's the general rule. Now, if you're a corner lot.
If you're a corner lot, you can pick whether this is the front or that is the front.
Well, usually a corner lot,
front,
you can pick which
rear.
Is your front and which is your rear.
Right.
Things like that.
But once you pick a front...
See what we're talking about?
No, yeah, I understand exactly.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm just suggesting that we, you know...
Whatever might... This is a cleanup to some extent. Clean it up.
You know, say if you're in this box... If you're anywhere across the width of a property,
if we're going to clean up, you put a diagram because that makes it. That gives it a good example of how we're measuring it.
That's very good. In most cases, you can see a diagram that explains in detail what the front yard and side yard looks like. And it's not a big deal to have a diagram.
Yeah. I don't know how my staff dropping PDF diagrams into our regulation. And it's possible. I can't say I've done it, but my
Commissioner
staff.
Mahler would like to see lots of, you know, pictures.
well, maybe Commissioner Mahler.
Well, I think. What's the word I'm looking for?
But the
standard anybody could argue would be that this is all front yard or whatever. This is all rear. This is side. That side. I mean that is the standard.
I would just like to look at the regulations.
But if the regulations say no planter in the front yard or no parking in the front yard, that really means from one boundary to the other boundary. It doesn't mean that you can take those edges and park cars in there because it's not the front yard. It's the front yard is the whole thing.
That's the standard we use for beautification.
And you're right. And that's the standard you use for beautification. But one could argue that that's my side yard, so you can't count that.
Well, why would you want to do that?
So then,
something will pop up, is what he's saying.
I'm just saying, somebody could say...
You're going to the 5% or 95%.
I'm just trying to...
credit. You are thinking out of the box.
That's a good thought.
any other comments? It's now 12:30, and I've kept you all past... your lunch time. We all good with this? We have some homework and I'll clean this up. I guess the other question, do you want to still see a marked up version or do you want to see a clean version? Do you want to see two?
I can turn it off. So if you give us a marked up version, all you need to do is just go up and turn it off. So
yeah.
Doesn't matter to me what you give me. I mean, okay. Either way, I like the markup version because I can turn it on and off as needed, right? With Word, that's what I do. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
So marked up works for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Any public comment? Any commissioner comment? I have a motion.
Sorry, not yet.
We have a couple more meetings, or at least one more.
Oh, yeah, the next meeting is.
But I'd like to thank David King and Jim for their service, and they won't be volunteering to be continuing after April or March or something.
I believe our term is up along with Dawn, who has expressed an interest in continuing. Our terms are up, as far as I can tell, February 10th.
Okay, so you'll be at the February meeting.
So we will be at the, you know, hopefully at the February 7th meeting. The next meeting is Saturday, February 7th at 10 a.m.
And at that meeting, I would suggest we set up the next meeting, and one of our agenda items is that we're going to have to, as I understand it, we vote to elect a chairman, so that would be maybe the first duty of the next meeting for us to do that. So
I would assume that the vice chair would be, the current vice chair would
step in.
You know, which is Mike Pereskevich, would take over scheduling the next meeting, the subsequent meeting, and running the meeting at least until a chair is nominated by the commission.
Okay, very good. That sounds good. So we got some continuity. I'm just looking for the continuity. Good, thanks. So thanks for your service.
So then at the next meeting, what I'll be thinking about, or based upon what we decide or what has to move forward, scheduling the agenda for that next meeting whenever it's suitable to everybody. And then the first thing on that agenda will be to elect the chairperson, along with whatever else we decide.
All right.
Has to go,
and depending on action by the commissioners, you may, that by the town commissioners, you may or may not have new members. Mm-hmm.
And I think you need five.
You need five. You need five members. I believe the planning commission is supposed to be seven. No less than five and no more than seven. So
right. you need five for a quorum, though, right?
No, you need a majority. Actually, you need a majority of the number.
You would need three.
Okay.
But to keep the planning, to be a planning commission, I believe that we need five members, five appointed members. So
we still have five.
The commissioners have to act to at least reappoint Dawn.
And then you would have your five.
Then you'd have the five.
Right, that's right. Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Any discussion?
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Well,